Hello and welcome back to Changing Room 4, the Championship Rugby podcast with Sid, Fids and Jamie. Thank you for joining us once again. What a sign-off to the 2021 season it's been this weekend. Lots of gripping games to finish. But before we get into them and before we start talking about some of the other talking points around the league at the moment, let's find out how Fids and Sid have spent their bank holiday weekend. Fids, let's come to you first. How have you been?
Yeah, good. We've actually spent the weekend together, Sid and I.
Together?
Oh,
yeah.
Together.
Oh, you left me out.
You kind of weren't invited, to be honest.
Oh, boys.
It's sort of a structural thing. But yeah.
You had to go to a certain institution to be able to enjoy the weekend that we've had.
Well, the mental institution. Yeah.
I was going to see which road he was going to take with that one and how offensive he wanted it to be. Pretty much. It's the same rubbish university that we went to.
Yeah. Well,
I had to remember it's 2021 in my answer there. There we go. So where did you go? What did you get up to?
We were down in Canterbury for a university old boys gathering. I say gathering, it was only a small group of us. Just the hardcore committed lads. And
the committed drinkers
others.
Of old.
Yeah. Usually a far more organised affair, which is actually quite impressive with like hundreds of people across different sports, and you know go out and then you play the sports hungover, and then there's, you know, boat race drinking at the end, and the, you know, and then there's an all day sesh on the Sunday and all that sort of stuff. But we just used it as a bit of a get together with the old uni rugby lot. We played a bit of randers instead of actually playing rugby because now all of our other arms come along. So it's harder for them to get involved. So we played randers instead. And I am
not all of them want to be
rounders,
hard.
By the way. Yeah, no, they don't want to do that. But I am incredible at rounders in our fiddler. How good was I?
Well, there are no words.
Sublime is the one that I would reach for, I think.
Yeah.
Sublime or often confused with ridiculous.
No, sublime.
Ridiculously sublime is a combo you could throw out.
Outrageous,
there.
Talented, good looking.
Yeah, all those, yeah.
and we won both games. Sid and I ended up on the same team, and we were just toying with the opposition to win with our last remaining batsman in both games, actually. Came down to the last hit of the ball.
Mm.
Last little bit of leather on MDF.
Yeah. What about yourself, Jamie? Huh? What have you been doing? Bit of bank holiday, walks out with the missus and stuff like that that you don't really want to do.
There was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a walk out with the missus on Monday, so that was nice. We spent the day together Monday, having spent Sunday having a bottomless brunch with some of our friends. So first bottomless brunch I've ever been to, and that's
the
a revelation.
First one you've
it?
Ever been to.
Where have you
been?
Yeah,
first one I've ever been to.
Where have you been? How have you avoided that?
I know. But it was brilliant. 2 hours, and I probably had about 9 glasses of Prosecco. So
you should have been there about 9 years ago when the bottomless brunch thing first happened. It literally would be people would offer it until like there would be no time limit.
Yeah.
And they really underestimated how far people would go for it. And they'd just be rolling out of it.
I am glad there was a time limit, to be honest. I probably wouldn't have restrained myself. And so they needed to do it for me. But yeah, it was good. It was good. I'll definitely do it again. Okay, let's round up what happened this weekend then. It was the final round of the Championship 2021 season. And it got off to a little bit of an unfortunate start, really, didn't it? We had the news that Saracens and Hartbury had their game cancelled. Cancelled there. They were given a 0-0 draw and awarded no league points. So we'll get onto that in a little bit, but that was cancelled. Then it was the Battle of Bedfordshire, the long-awaited Battle of Bedfordshire, which was held at Goldington Road in front of 1,000-odd fans, which Bedford eventually came out 32-28 winners over Ampthill. So tight game there. One for the fans, definitely. That would have been a bit of a thriller. There was Richmond had Coventry at home. It was 22 points to Richmond, 42 points to Coventry. Not quite getting the upper hand on Richmond until fairly late in the game, but another entertaining game there for the fans. Jersey had Cornish Pirates come to visit, and my oh my, 32 points to 31 in favour of the Reds. That was quite something down there. That was a tight game in the end. And then the last game was Doncaster at home to Nottingham, 29 points to 24. So probably quite a close game there that we wouldn't necessarily have predicted earlier on in the season. So that leaves the table looking like this. Ealing at the top, as we knew before. Saracens in second on 40 points still. So they were denied the opportunity to have the choice over where to play their home leg of the playoff. We'll get onto that in a bit. Doncaster in third. Cornish Pirates in fourth, only just behind them, 2 points behind them on 30 was Coventry. Jersey Reds, after a bit of a poor start to the season, making it up into sixth by the end. Ampthill in seventh, Bedford in eighth, Hartbury in ninth, Nottingham just behind them on the same points, both on 12 in 10th, and then Richmond bringing up the rear in 11th with 4 points.
Time on!
So let's start with the Saracens versus Hartbury game then. We may as well.
That's
or the
a big
non-game.
Start. Big start.
Great result for Hartbury.
Yeah, I know, a draw. Who predicted a draw against Saracens at the beginning of the season?
The 1 week.
The 1 week.
So it was 0-0. 0-0. The league, the RFU, decided that they were going to postponed the match first off, then they eventually cancelled it and they said that it would be recorded as a 0-0 draw with no league points awarded to either team. A lot of reaction on social media to that. People were not happy. Do you think they were justified in not being happy? Was that a fair way to do it?
I have two thoughts on this. First thought, because of the COVID outbreak at Hartbury and for the protection of, you know, Hartbury players, staff, and obviously the Saracens players and staff, right decision. My second thought, the statement that the RFU put out to say to protect the integrity of the league, I disagree with.
So just to quote that word for word, it was, while the positions of the clubs in the league table was not considered to be a relevant factor in determining the outcome of the cancellation, it was noted that the effect of the decision would not undermine the integrity of the competition.
So for me, that was wrong. I don't think they should have brought that into the statement, because Saracens could quite well have qualified in first. If we look at the current table, they're only 1 point in terms of points difference behind Ealing. We're 5 points behind Ealing, but we probably would have fully expected them to take a 5-point win by more than a point, unless Hartbury really turned it on. And after the season they've had, I doubt that. So, you know, it just means that Ealing now get the choice of whether they want the home leg first or second over Saracens. So, I mean, ultimately it doesn't affect anything because you've got to win those two games. But I think the integrity of the competition is slightly tarnished because you just prevented Saracens from potentially coming top. But there we are. It doesn't really matter, does it? Saracens play Ealing. They've got to do it twice.
Unless Fiddler, right? How's this? How's this for the Mark McCall coaching moment of the year if he pulls this one out of the bag? Okay? So that's the precedent that the RFU have set. 0-0 draw. If I'm Mark McCall and I play Ealing wherever, at Stonks or at the Trailfinders, and then I find my team up by however much.
Call it 5 points.
Five points. It can be either team. Why don't I just get all of my team infected?
Ooh, and then yeah, if... Claim COVID.
Yeah, claim COVID. I'll take the 0-0 in the second leg. I've got the win.
Oh, you rascal. Oh, you devil, Sid Young.
It would be devious, and I struggle to see Saracens doing that, but the precedent has been set.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So, you know, the whole it seems like the precedent across all other sport, and even in rugby in different, you know, leagues or whatever, is that the, you know, in inverted commas, offending team, the team who, you know, has caused the game to be postponed or cancelled, is kind of not, you know, punished or disciplined, but it's, you know, because of them that there's an issue, and so they will find themselves becoming worse off. So to give out a draw, surely they'll take that. Yeah. So, you know, I think if that's the precedent they've set, then I think it's quite dangerous, to be honest.
And what if a playoff place had been at stake? What if Saracens needed 5 points or 2 points or 1 point?
Yeah.
And they've done that. What if a playoff place had been at stake?
Well, I think it was easy that it wasn't. So they made the decision to
as
they did. But if it was on the other
foot, they're claiming that the table positions had no factor in the.
We're struggling to come to a reasonable conclusion as to, you know, why. You know, if it was this, then they would never have come to the same conclusion if it was, would they? And so I just can't see how that consistent. Yeah,
there
exactly.
Would have been uproar.
And I just can't find a devil's advocate of an argument either. I can't find an opposing view, to be honest. Other than, and you know, you'd look on social media or whatever, you know, and then you just got the same old people saying, "Oh, well, yeah, because it." Salary cap and this and that, and you know, but you know, we're past that. It's a completely different situation now, whether it was Saracens or whoever.
It doesn't matter.
There's no real good structured arguments as to any other decisions. I just can't find it.
What would the alternative have been? It would have been, I don't know, would you have done 4 points to Saracens, 1 point to Hartbury, in which case Saracens are denied a bonus point, which they would likely have got.
Well, traditionally, it's the 28-0, isn't it?
Two points each, or?
Well, yeah, traditionally. Well,
are you saying Hartbury should have been classified as at fault in that case?
Well, yeah. To be honest, like I don't know. Maybe that's a bit brutal of me, but you know, they've managed to keep a lid on it the rest of the season up until now, and so have the other teams. And teams have to make sacrifices for that. And, you know, we've been singing the praises of Jersey, who have been, you know, going through all sorts, you know, jumping through all sorts of hoops to make sure that their games are all COVID compliant, which in the big thing is not playing half of their games at home. And so, yeah, the only way to really balance that out is by laying down the law in that it doesn't matter if we're at the, you know, front end or the back end of this coronavirus stuff, if you know the rules are rules and we need to keep high standards of ourselves in this league, then there needs to be a clear and obvious punishment for if those rules are not upheld.
I can't help but think that it just would have been so much easier if they had come up with a policy before the season had started for this exact situation.
Well,
which
hadn't
I
they?
believe Premiership Rugby did. I
yeah.
think they did.
Yeah.
And they just said if this ever happens,
it's usually
happen.
I think
and
it's usually a 28-0.
Yeah,
four tries bonus point win 28-0.
Yeah, whoever's declaring they can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it should have been that, to be honest.
Well, listeners, if you agree or if you disagree, then please do let us know on social media. We'd be really interested to hear what you think should have been done as opposed to what was actually done. So please do get in touch. Let's look at brighter things then. So, Bedford versus Ampthill. Tight game in the back of the Bedfordshire there. 32 points to 28. Bedfordshire running out winners. Who watched it? Anybody see any of this? Or catch up on the highlights?
Rich Lane's break. He is just the key to this whole statistic of the 60%, if this is true or not. We still don't know. The 60% of tries within the 22.
You've taken the words right out of my mouth. Rich Lane, again, at the heart of two of those tries.
Yeah, yeah. Rich Lane, huge break. The pace is ridiculous. The deception on how he gets through that line. He gets the pass off to Gillespie. And then the Gillespie offload as well. That is what really it puts that try up there in terms of standard, because that was no accident. That's some serious skill there. And then Elijah Nico to finish it off. It really was an impressive try. And yeah, again, we love the Blues style of play, don't we, here on this podcast? And it was just fantastic to see. And what a game. What a game it must have been for all those fans at Golden and Row. 6 tries in the first half, I think it was. So yeah, what a show, what a performance. Derby game in the sunshine. Great day for rugby.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think everything that we've said, the superlatives that we spoke about Sid and his rounders earlier on in the podcast, you could apply exactly the same to Rich Lane. You know, not just for the work that he does off the ball to get himself into those spaces and to hit those gaps and to hit those lines just at the right time when the pass has been sent out, but his leadership. You know, he's captained the side quite extensively this season after Sean McCarthy has sort of been in and out with injury. He's usually the club captain, but Rich Lane stepped up in those times that Sean's been absent. And he's just been fantastic, you know, and that experience must, you know, really be helping those young players like Tom Litchfield, like Ryan Oliverfella, you know, boys that are probably going to do great things for Saints because of their dual registry. So, you know, what an asset to have at this level.
And I think we'd be remiss in avoiding the subject of the red card. The fact that Bedford had a red card on 26 minutes and still managed to win the game. They spent 54 minutes without a player and then had a yellow card later on in the game as well. So they were down to 13. Good stat. 13 men for the fourth time in the season. And yeah, they've come back to win it. And actually, they were leading most of the time. Amtel only really took the lead towards the end, and then Bedford snatched it back. So, yeah, great determination on show.
Definitely. And I think, as we alluded to earlier, we like Bedford's attacking style. I think if you just look at the try scorers for both sides, it's very much, I think, attributive to the style of play that those teams have. You know, all of Bedford's 5 tries were scored by the back division. And the whole of Amtel's 4 tries were scored by the forward pack.
I picked this up as well. It's the same thing we were talking about last week, wasn't it?
I mean, it is attributive.
Attributive. Is that a word?
Certainly.
Is that a word? Is that how you pronounce it? Attributive or attributive? Or is it even a word?
Well, whatever. You know, if anyone didn't understand that, then please do get in touch. I will, you know, happily take elocution lessons.
You'll be happy to clarify in the well-balanced medium of social media.
Oh, obviously. Very balanced indeed. Very balanced. But yeah, I just wanted to say that it's very much linked to their style of play. That I think, you know, five tries from the back division in terms of Bedford's play, and then the 4 from Amtel came from their forward pack. And, you know, the red card's one of those, isn't it? I think, you know, we saw Charlie Beckett from Amtel sin-binned in the same action as he was holding Ollie Curry in at the ruck. And while Ollie Curry was trying to get his feet free, he made contact with the head, which obviously you can't do, so the red card is obviously the right outcome. But in terms of the cause, shall we say, it was a little bit of skullduggery.
It was.
From the mob.
Which we've seen at times this season. Saracens, there was some underhanded stuff going on as well. But it's all stuff that everybody knows happens and we've all done before. So you can't really get too wound up about it.
No, but very pleasing for Bedford in particular, I think, to end their season on such a high. You know, I think that by their standards, they'll be disappointed to have only won 3 games out of the 10. But to beat the rivals and keep Bedfordshire blue for the time being is, I'm sure, more than enough.
I did enjoy the little bit of spice on social media between the two clubs. Either of you picked up on this? There's no love lost between Bedford and Amtel, is there?
I'm picturing like Green Street, you know, down the terraces, and you've got the Blues and the mob, and you know, all the Bedfordshire Dorians.
It's not. It's not quite like that. Bedford, but certainly
Bedfiddler. What are you saying for that?
Bedfordians.
The Amptillians and the Bedfordians. Waging war with each other. Yeah.
Not quite, but it was
waging middle class war with each other.
Having a duel.
I just thought some of the language used in the Bedford Blues updates was quite pointed towards Amptill. I'll find a couple. So here we go. Try Blues, what a start. Amptill make a right hash of the clearance. It bobbles all over the place, but Josh Gillespie gets there first. Like, just, yeah, a little pointed dig.
But why not? Why not have a bit of fun? Life's too short.
It's great. I found it great, and then Amptill definitely got back in on the action with some of their responses. Yeah, here we go. So, Amptill on 73 minutes, 1,000 Bedford fans berate the ref for awarding us a scrum. I'd hate to see how they'd react if anything worse happened. # dry your eyes.
You know, what I love about it is that both of those comms officers would have been sitting a total of about 5 yards away, reading exactly what it, like in real time, exactly what the other one's saying.
Okay, let's look at Jersey Reds versus Cornish Pirates then. So 32 points to 31, tight game this, another thriller for the end of season. Sid, any thoughts? Did you see this?
Yeah, so one element that I'm seeing creep into a few games, and I saw Jersey actually fall victim to it, is in defence. I think I mentioned it a week or two ago. The defence is maybe a bit reluctant to drift, and that's perhaps because of a defensive objective being to focus on blitz defence or whatever else. But I didn't really seem to see much blitzing either. So they're doing a really good job of, you know, staying in channels and sticking to the man or whatever. But that is actually quite easy to penetrate unless you really apply the pressure and shut that down. I mean, I'm saying that, you know, Jersey were, falling victim to that. But I'm seeing it just across the league a little bit more. But they obviously did come out of the winners. It was a combination of both, you know, methods of scoring. There was some stuff in the tight. There was some stuff on the set piece. But there was also some, you know, great breaks through the middle and some open play. So good to see. Again, a great one for the fans, tight as it was. It was also a big kicking game as well, though. Elements were different to what we've had so far. A lot of the time it's been really windy or whatever else. But obviously everything over this weekend has been really nice and steady. So everyone sort of playing the game that they want to play, I suppose, unless you're worried about your blitz defence and you're absolutely knackered and you've been in the sun for 80 minutes and then you're letting people scythe through your defensive line. But no, overall, an entertaining game. And you know what? Good on. I did predict Pirates to win, but good on Jersey for coming away with the one point win.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well-matched contest, to be honest. Both teams did well in both the forwards and the backs. There was flowing play on both sides, and it was just generally a great spectacle and a really good game for supporters to go and see. Mm. I would have loved to have been there. Mm. It was really tight, gripping all the way through.
Well, a flight's only 36 quid, mate. As we found out.
It's definitely lower. Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. Sid, it's great that you sort of called out the kicking. I was going to bring up the kicking of Max Green, scrum half for Jersey. I think he varied his game very well just to keep the Pirates' defence on their toes. And his kick for Tom Williams, you know, it was just it was an up and under, essentially, but put it right on the money and was contestable.
What a take, yeah, what a contest
Tom Williams
that
got
was.
Up above. I can't remember now who was it. Fullback for the Pirates, but he got up above his man, took the ball and was in. So
very strong in the air.
Really strong. So, you know, a kick is only as good as its chase. And I thought that, Jersey varied their attack very well, which just kept the Pirates guessing. So they turned out to sneak it. I mean, they were comfortable. It was two late tries, wasn't it, from the Pirates? You know, they thought that the comeback was on. But I think I think they just left themselves too much to do.
Strong finish to the season from Jersey. Having lost four of their first five games, they've come back and won four of the next five.
Yeah, really strong. I think it's helped that they've gone back to some form of normality and that games have been played at the Stade Santander. So next season, they'll probably look to push on. You know, they've got a very strong squad. It seems a very balanced squad. And if the fact that we're now hopefully moving away from this sort of situation we're in at the moment with COVID and it's a little bit more settled and the season does start in September and we can travel and there's no restrictions, you know, I think Jersey will think that they're a force. And I would put them as a dark horse. I think they'll
challenge. Well, you said this last week, didn't you?
I did.
You said Jersey could well challenge.
I think Jersey, Cornish and Doncaster, you know, there's probably going to be a little battle there. I think Coventry probably not far off, but maybe not quite there yet. But certainly Jersey, Cornish Pirates and Doncaster, I think, will challenge for that second spot again should Ealing or Saracens decide not to go to the Premiership.
There's that that backs up what we said a little while ago about this idea of if we carried this season on for another set of home and away games, you know, who knows where Jersey could be if there was another 10 games to come, or, you know, 11 games, whatever it might be. Yeah, you know, they're on that roll. And I think if you were to plot on a graph, you know, games where we've not played our home games in our own stadium versus where we have played our home games in our home stadium, and, you know, the results there, that's, you know, that's no coincidence, is it? Do you think?
No.
So, yeah, it just goes to show, you know, I think Jersey could be turning it around. If there was another 10 games to go this season, who knows how high they could be climbing.
Shout out to Dan Frost, though. Ends his Cornish Pirates career with a nice little try. Takes him to 7 and is their top scorer for the season. And I believe he's made the terrible decision to go and join Wasps.
Oh, nothing terrible about that. That's probably the smartest move he's made in his whole career. He'll love it. An attacking hooker like that, scoring tries for fun. Absolutely. He'll love it in that setup.
I think we're going to need to find a bigger boat. Dangle another one out there.
So, bringing it back from Jersey to London then, Richmond versus Coventry. Another entertaining game, quite high scoring. 22 points from Richmond, including 3 tries, and 42 points from Coventry, including 6 tries. So, yeah, definitely. The sunshine that we've had this week after the month of rain has really been quite productive for running rugby, hasn't it?
Definitely. Does it beg the question that rugby becomes a summer sport? Let football go and play in the rain?
No. No.
Well, you get all this attacking flair.
You'd get so many injuries. People would hate it.
Almost like there's another version of rugby that's played in the summer. Oh, wait. Rugby league.
Yeah, or even tens and sevens.
Yeah.
Like you can get all that.
Well, we've got the Olympics this year for the sevens. We'll get our fix.
Yeah. But running rugby was a bit of a theme for this game, especially from the Coventry perspective. Coventry just seemed to stay alive in their attack for, you know, so well and for so long, and even, you know, deep into the first half, you know, when everyone's quite tired out there on their feet. But it just, I mean, whilst that's really good to see, it, you know, it puts the opposing team on the back foot. So if you're making a break, you make one break, you might not have your support, but at least your support get there to clear out the ruck. And then obviously your defensive team have to work their way around the ruck and then come through the gate. It takes them all a little bit longer. And Coventry were really building up some good phase play into some of their tries. That's really, really good to see. But what will, you know, what's required of them to take them to the next level, you know, where you're looking at your pedestal of Saracens and the like, is where you've got such overwhelming amount of support when you make those runs and you make those breaks or whatever, rather than having to recycle every time at the breakdown and risk people, you know, having people off their feet or whatever else. You know, you've got plenty of offload options, and then once they start going to hand, then you've got some real dangerous players. And then I think Charles Fidler, you've got a team that's going to be really contending out of that little mini group that you mentioned earlier. But not to take anything away from the good display that Coventry put on. As I say, that style of play, you know, worked out really effectively against Richmond. And so good on Coventry for that one.
I did think that they struggled for fluidity a bit in the first half, though. And it kind of shows that Richmond, it was 0-0 until about 20-odd minutes, and then Richmond took the lead, and Coventry didn't really wrest it back from them until fairly late in the first half. And then in the second half, they did kind of get their act together a bit and sorted it out. So it was good tempo in the second half, but just the first half was... it just lacked a bit of fluidity.
Yeah, this is it. And I think, you know, fluidity and continuity, you know, that's not an on-off switch. That's a spectrum. And this is what I mean. Some things you can do better. And so when they make these breaks or whatever else, and then there's a, you know, as we say, a breakdown, can the breakdowns be quicker? Can people get to the breakdowns quicker? What reason is that? We spoke about match fitness before. You know, the level of difference that that makes. Is it because of their game plan? You know, if you're Bedford and you know what your game plan is, and I use Bedford because it's a bit of a standout example in terms of the way that they play. But even when you go down to 13 or 14 men, as we mentioned, if we know that Rich Lane's going to break the line every single time, then you maybe commit more to running hard onto his shoulder at the risk of overrunning a ruck. But because you know that you're playing for Bedford and you've got Rich Lane who's running with the ball at the moment, he's going to take those extra 1-2 steps and then give the offloads to you. And then maybe that's why they're seeing success, and maybe where Coventry can kind of nail down how they're going to play. And then rather than the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players that are closest to the ball, you know, making the big decision, all of the, you know, 15, 23 bigger, you know, full squad, they'll be all singing off the same hymn sheet, everyone will be orchestrated, and then they can really build that continuity.
Yeah, I have to agree. I do think, though, that, you know, for Coventry to make that next step, they really need to up their game defensively, I believe. I think they're very good going forward. I think they've got an obvious strength in the pack. The majority of the tries have come through their forwards this season, you know, so they're very clinical when it comes to mauls, scrums, you know, anything in the opposition 22, they're very clinical with. For me, it's defensively, and I just think they got caught out. So if we talk about Luke Jones's first try for Richmond on the occasion of his 50th cap, so well done to him. They were caught very narrow. And by that, you know, they didn't keep their width in the defence. And what it took was just one long miss pass out to Rob Kirby, running on from fullback, very much like the Rich Lane example. Mm. He then had a very simple 2-on-1 with the winger, puts in Alex Goble, who then had a 2-on-1 with Luke Jones running back on his inside. And that was the try for Richmond. That was the opening score, I believe. And I just think that defensively this season they've been found wanting a little bit more. I mean, if you look at the table, they're sitting on a points difference of -30, so they've conceded more than they've actually scored, and for me they're actually a decent attacking unit. So I just think if they want to take that next step, then just have to work out which strategy that suits their style of play and work on it in pre-season.
The last game of the week then was Doncaster Knights against Nottingham. A close game, closer than we would have thought or anticipated earlier on in this season, I think. Doncaster 29, Nottingham 24. It shows, for me, quite how far Nottingham have come in these last few weeks, really, and what they've been building towards since the beginning of the season. As we learned from Warren Muggleton when he was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, they had a very limited pre-season. They only had 4, 5, 6 weeks or something together. It ended up meaning they had quite a disorganised start to their playing season. But they've really come together and put in a decent performance for their final game.
Well, it goes to show, there's no messing about in the Championship, is there? No, you know, no easy predictions all the way to the final round of the season. You've got, you know, Doncaster there, who would you know, a fair shout at getting into that playoff spot. And then you had Nottingham, who we just couldn't even see winning a game all season long, and it came right down to the wire. And that's on top of, you know, Jersey and Cornish Pirates, and on top of Blues Amptill, you know, all in the same week. What more do you want out of your championship for a start?
It was a cracking bunch of games, definitely.
Mm.
Yeah, and what more do you want to see a hooker intercepting the ball 60 metres yes. out?
Yeah, 80, I'd call it 80. He was on his own 22.
You know, if that was Dane Coles, we'd be talking about it for weeks.
Yeah.
Well, even Asafa Wamoa, who scored down in New Zealand the other week, exactly the same thing. You know, there's so much love for that on social media at the moment, and Jake Farnworth has done exactly the same thing. So, big up Jake Farnworth.
The wheels on him, honestly.
Mm.
Pace for a hooker. Yeah. Picked up the intercept and he was away. and then the second piece of outrageous skill, if you're going to win a game, then as a back rower being tackled, and before you've hit the deck, you release an out the back, round the back offload to your scrum half, who then steps one and bulldozes his way through another. You know, 22-year-old Sam Pocklington pops up with a match-winning score right at the death. It's amazing.
Well, that's it. He's been getting the physicality lessons off of all of his other mates down at up at Doncaster, isn't he? None less than Big Bomber with big news as well.
Yeah.
How about that? How about that? Scotland have selected Bomber Hislop for their summer squad. Brilliant. Congratulations, Bomber.
Yeah.
I've been tearing it up in the championship and clearly been spotted. So, yeah, great news for him. Great news for the championship. Absolutely proven its value. What more can you say?
I was having this semi-argument with a friend over the weekend, and he basically just hates Saracens, hates everyone about it. you know, cannot see any value in having any of them going on the Lions tour. Right, Owen Farrell, no, bid him. Keep him at home. He ain't coming. Worthless. Hey, each their own. And he says, you know, how can you have a championship player move to that standard? Well, but then, you know, we all understand that this is it's a summer. Well, it's not a summer tour, but it's summer fixtures and all the rest of it. But how many Scottish players in the Premiership, in the Pro 14 or wherever else, are missing out on that place, and Bomber's got it. So it just goes to show the level, the, you know, the standard of the players that are in this league.
Well, he's not just the only example, is he? Obviously, he's moved to Wasps, but we've seen Dan Frost move to Wasps. There's obviously a quite a nice partnership that Worcester have with Jersey Reds. There's a few boys going each way, but is it Scott Van Breda signed a permanent deal at Worcester? It's a breeding ground of talent that, you know, we saw actually Manny.
Yeah, definitely.
Breeding ground.
All right. It's a breeding ground of talent. You know, you look at Manny Jurgen, all right, Bedford prop. So for the last 5 or 6 weeks, he's been playing for Bedford, doing really well. Made his Saints debut at the weekend.
It's almost as if the RFU could pay this league a bit of money and then use it to build players to go.
Hold your horses.
God forbid.
Hold your horses, Sid. You cannot possibly be suggesting proper funding for the championship.
That is heresy.
No way.
Wash your mouth out with soap, young man. That is awful. How could you suggest such a thing?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I know.
Call me crazy.
We all agree with you.
Call me crazy, but
I mean, it's no. On a serious note, you are absolutely not crazy, because there's been a couple of articles that have come out this week, really bringing the spotlight on the underfunding of the championship. So one was in the Telegraph, headline: Championship clubs plead for clarity over finances for next season. With just 2 months until the 2021-22 campaign, clubs remain in the dark about the level of funding they'll receive from the RFU and PRL. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
2 months away from a new season, and they have no idea how much money they're going to have to be able to pay their players, to be able to pay their staff. They're relying on gates and income from match day attendance, and they can't plan for that because who knows how many fans are going to be allowed when. And they still can't get any certainty over what their level of funding's going to be.
Mm.
Considering that they had it slashed in half before the pandemic, and then obviously during the pandemic, some of these sides have chosen not to take up the government loans because they just weren't, they weren't feasible. They weren't feasible for the clubs to do. And you're looking
and then
at...
And they've not had any tickets or gate or hospitality or
no
anything.
Tickets, none of that. None of that. So they're running on limited income anyway. And yeah, it's in the article, the Charles Richardson is the journalist. He says compared with around £600,000 2 years ago, the clubs have kind of effectively received only £160,000 in central funding this season.
Well, and the worst part is that even if it was going to be a significantly you know, slash number, the worst part is that they still don't know. What other sector, what other industry can you get away with that? Like, the, you know, the people in charge, where your performance is relying on that kind of knowledge, you know, how they can't recruit because of it. You know, that's players, that's top level stuff. That's like not even thinking about how many people they have to pay that actually work for the club, that are not rugby players, you know. So they've got no idea how much money they're going to have available. Even if it was a slash number, if you knew, you could at least plan. But they can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. I think the clubs are basically just planning on the expectation that they're going to get nothing more, but nothing less. So they're just going with the 160,000 that they've effectively got. But it's just a total dereliction of duty from the RFU towards the championship.
Mm.
It really is. And let's put the RFU response across as well. They said championship funding is variable and linked to the RFU's profit this year. We're likely to make a loss of between £30 to £35 million. However, we've continued to provide funding to the championship and have not prorated it for a shorter season. Interesting point. They also say they've got a responsibility to support the wider community game, and it's 1,900 clubs. So you've got that.
Yeah, but okay, they've not prorated it for a shortened season, but the community clubs don't get money in from gate that these bigger clubs have. So a lot of the community,
and they don't have overheads either.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't have the overheads of having to pay the players. For the most part.
Yeah, exactly. And these ones do. So, yeah, there's for and against, you know, all over the place. But ultimately, what we've led into is that we're seeing hard evidence of the league being a place where you can build players to play at a high level, a higher level. So surely it's in the interest. Hey, well, look, come a few years down the line, you know, maybe there'll be more evidence to support it, and then they'll actually, you know, come round to it. But it just seems such a shame that this year, despite all the adversity, the championship and its players have done so well, and they're not getting at least a little bit more. And I'm not saying more in terms of, you know, more money and pound signs or whatever, but at least a little bit more respect in letting clubs know if they can keep their staff on, you know, pay them that respect at least.
I think for me, the biggest question that I would like asked is, and the point I'll take from the RFU statement, championship funding is variable and linked to the RFU's profit. Is that scaled up to the Premiership? Is the Premiership funding variable? Is the England players funding variable? Like, if you're going to make something variable, then scale it.
I bet it's less variable.
Well, yeah, exactly. If you're scaling it on a loss, then the England players are going to have to take a bit of a cut for playing their games, aren't they? If you're going to set up a structure that's going to be productive and is going to support rugby and the development of athletes in this country into that England squad, and you're going to aim for national success, you have to have the foundations that are going to support that. Mm. And by not scaling the amount of funding according to profit all the way through those levels, you're just absolutely undermining your entire purpose, your entire mission.
Well, you look at the number of players that are in Warren Gatland's Lions squad that have championship experience. Ali Price was at Bedford. Owen Farrell spent time there. Johnny Hill was at... Hartbury, wasn't he?
We went through it a little while ago, didn't we?
So I agree with everything that you're saying. However, if you're a Jersey fan, potential away trips next year, if you do decide to join... To join the pro D2. So you're potentially heading to places like Rouen, Aurillac, Mont-de-Marsan, Carcassonne, Grenoble, Oyonnax, Biarritz.
I mean, it's great for the away trips, isn't it? It's great for the away trips. However, it's a sad state of affairs that they're even having to consider that.
I was just about to say, none of them have Europe's biggest sundial, so where's the...
Where's the attraction? Where's the draw?
Exactly.
No, it's a great point. Like, this is the other article, the rugby paper. Jersey Reds have explored moving to French rugby because they just cannot get enough money from English rugby. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy that they're even having to consider that. And apparently Pro D2 clubs receive around £2 million in funding from the Ligue Nationale Rugby.
The LNR. Oh, okay.
Easy for you to say.
I can't speak for everyone and I can't speak for the listeners, but I'm sitting here thinking, good on you, Jersey. It's definitely not their fault, is it? You know?
They're considering making the most of a bad situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and geographically, they're a lot closer to mainland France.
There are other obstacles which come into play, which the article does go into. So go have a look on the Rugby Paper website if you want to have a look and find out some more details. But it's something that is potentially feasible, but it's an absolute travesty that they're even having to think about it.
Yeah,
agreed.
That is the end of the games for the regular season of 2021. We obviously don't have any more predictions to make unless we want to talk about the playoff final, but I think we'll leave that.
How did we get on in this week's prediction?
Well, if you just wait for me to come to it, Sid, I was building towards giving you the results.
What
a set of results they were. So, none of us got the same score.
Oh. That's bad for one
of us.
One
of us finished on only 2 out of 4. Any guesses?
Probably me.
It was Sid. Sid finished on 2 out of 4. God. I mean, if we're being kind, we'll give you the Saracens one, but we're not being kind, so you don't get that.
Two out of five. The other ones were really close.
Yeah, but you lost. You lost.
Yeah, I suppose at the end of the day.
And then...
an L's an L, wasn't it?
And then Charles... one of you and I got 3, and the other one got a full house of 4.
Oh.
Now, I don't think it was me, because I think I said Ampthill would beat Bedford, and I have a sneaking suspicion that...
You did! Bedford. I got 4. Brilliant news. Come on!
It's the worst full house we've had all season.
It's
going to
be unbearable for the rest of the pod.
I properly called them all. And I would have had Saracens as well, so I'm calling that 5 out of 5.
Well, I think Hartbury actually did.
No, actually, this has been called a draw, so I think that makes it a very average 4 out of 5. We've had many of those this season.
Nah, I'm taking that full house. I'm having it. I'm having it. So there we
it's
go.
It's my pod. It's my rules.
It's not my pod. It's our pod. We've got equal ownership.
Yeah, when it suits you, but when it comes to the divorce.
when it comes to splitting the profits from all the sponsons that are going to come rolling in.
We'll look after the podcast every other weekend. Bank holiday.
You can put it on your mantelpiece for 6 months and then it has to move.
Ran mine on Boxing Day, but you get it Christmas Day, didn't you? Yeah.
Exactly. But anyway, that was predictions, so a strong finish to the season for moi. Unlucky, guys.
Yeah, cheers.
No nibble. No nibble whatsoever.
Last play.
In which case, we come to the final last play of the season. Sid, over to you.
Here we are, the final last play of the season, on the assumption that we won't do another one on the upcoming show. So, yeah, for what might be the last play of the season. So, yeah, went out over the bank holiday weekend. Obviously, had a couple of drinks.
Limoncellos.
Couple of limoncellos, you know, yeah. Indulged in a few crafty beers, didn't I? So, I've been shopping again, lads.
Oh.
I've been shopping again. And I've been scouring the country for our nation's finest craft beers. So what I have for you is a selection of 9 craft beers from around the country, from locations of championship clubs.
Of course.
This is like perfect research for an away day, isn't it?
it really is. Some
merchandise local, last week.
Yeah.
Beer
yeah.
this week.
I'm getting good at this.
Yeah.
11 in. So all that's going to happen is I'm going to read out. Have you got a pen and paper with you? That'd be handy. Or whatever you've
at
got.
At the ready. The ready.
yes.
Back of a cigarette packet, maybe, Fids. Yeah, okay, get right. So all that's going to happen is I'm going to read out the 9 names of these beers, and you need to make a guess as to which place they come from, okay? Or the you know, club that they're associated or whatever. There is 1 fake beer in there. There's a red herring. It's a red herring, and a little bit of danger. Yeah, a little bit of danger. So for your danger beer, you can write whatever you want. Danger beer, a red herring IPA or whatever. So if you want to put that in there, you're more than welcome. And if you get that right, let's say that gives you 2 points. Ooh. Just to spice things up.
Jeopardy. Isn't this hotting up?
It's a shame there's nothing riding on the outcome of this game.
If only it was important. But hey, we've gone
not
pretty
to,
far.
Not to rain on your parade.
Well, I've had a clean sweep for the season, haven't I?
But hey, if you want something that is exciting, what we do have after a whole season of Sid's last plays is some backing music. So,
yes.
Let's get the tension going as we start. That's not it, listeners. That's Jamie.
It's Jamie singing.
Tension. Okay, ready? Cue the music. No, stop. We've got real music now. Okay. All right. Okay. Cue the music. There we go. Okay, right. So, I don't want you to say anything. Okay, until I get to all 9. You just need to write down your order of where you think they're from. Okay, you ready? Question 1. Mucky Bucket Black Pale Ale. You may have heard of Green King's East Coast IPA. This is a West Coast IPA, and it is cleverly named after a serial killer. Let's Be Frank, West Coast IPA.
Is this number 2?
This is number 2, yes. Number 2. Beached Whale Pale Ale. Hey, stop it.
Are you sure that's even a drink?
Stop it. We're being serious.
Oh, I'm writing down the beer, not the place. Oh, I don't know.
Beached Whale Pale Ale. Number 4. God's Twisted Sister Oatmeal Stout. Number 5. Sorry, I've only got 8, by the way. This can't be.
You need to find another one.
Big Willy Milk Stout. Well, it might be Big Willy Milk Stout.
Oh, no. Oh no. Oh dear.
Stop laughing. Stop. Tension. We've got tense music. It's tense now. We're not here to have a good time. Big Willy Milk. Stout. Number six. Who paid for that floor? IPA. Who paid for that floor?
Who paid for that floor?
Whatever penultimate number we're on. Seven. You'll like this one, Jamie. Get your bleep button ready. Work shy, fuck the status quo, IPA.
What?
Work shy, colon, fuck the status quo, IPA. And
if that's real, that's a terrible name for a beer.
It's the world of craft beer, mate. It's the world of craft beer. And our final one, nice and topical, but is it tropical? We don't know. Anyway, zombie vaccine, pale ale. Zombie vaccine, pale ale. Okay, so you've got your answers, which means now we can unveil and go on to the light-hearted game show music. Cue your game show music. Okay, all right, so first up we had the Mucky Bucket Black Pale Ale.
I've gone for Doncaster.
Jamie, you've gone for Doncaster. Charles, you've gone for Nottingham. The history of the Mucky Bucket... coal prompted Doncaster's growth of the River Don and Don Navigation. We used to transport coal from Doncaster to steel production centres at Rotherham, Scunthorpe and Sheffield. Doncaster
yes.
is where Mucky Bucket
Get
comes
in.
From. Okay.
Straight off the bat.
Number two, got confused and thought that Frank West was actually Fred West, but never mind. Let's be frank, West Coast IPA. Fiddler?
I was wondering what on earth you were on about.
I think this is, rather than the location, it's a play on words. So when you said West Coast, so I'm saying it's a Cornish Pirates.
Bear in mind, the origin of East Coast IPA and West Coast IPA, I think, is American. It's nothing really to do with...
Doesn't matter.
Okay, good.
It's what I've gone for.
It's a style rather than a location. I've gone for Hartbury.
You've gone for Hartbury, but it's not paid off. It has paid off for Charles Fiddler. He's only gone and got it right, isn't he? It's from Cornwall. Cornish Pirates, 1-0.
Lovely jubbly.
That means I've got another one wrong later on.
Okay, all right. Number three, the Beached Whale Pale Ale.
I'm playing Joker on this one. I think it's fake.
I think that one's a fake one.
I'm saying Jersey.
And you've gone Jersey.
I'm saying Jersey.
See, Fiddler's really looking into the names here, and he's only got it right again, isn't he?
Oh.
Jersey. Clearly a lot of beach whales in Jersey. The Beach Whale Pale Ale.
Lovely jubbly.
Okay. God's Twisted Sister, Oatmeal Stout.
Richmond.
On Richmond.
Oh, and Amptill.
Amptill. Nilpois. It's actually from Coventry.
Oh, no. Coventry. That means I've got another one wrong later. Shit.
The Big Willy Milk Stout.
So this one I put Doncaster, so it's obviously wrong, isn't it?
Oh, I put Coventry
for
this.
It's not gone Doncaster and it's not Coventry. I made that one up. But
of course you did.
Yeah,
should
you
should have bloody well known. Should have known.
Double bluffed you. I did have to because I spent a lot of time researching silly names of craft beers and it gets a lot weirder than what I've got on this. And I did have to put into my browser Big Willy Milk... and then beer or whatever, and there are a few beers that are called Big Willy, and it's like ha ha ha, but none that are called that are a milk stout, which I thought was hilarious. So Big Willy Milk Stout, you've missed out on your double points there, unfortunately. Never mind. Okay, next up, who paid for that floor? IPA.
I put Cornish Pirates.
Cornish
but
Pirates. No, Fiddler.
I'm going to say Richmond.
Richmond. It's not Richmond either. That one is from the Neon Raptor Brewing Company in Nottingham. Lots of weird ones in there. Plenty going on in Nottingham for a bit of craft beer, but yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay, next up, Workshire Fuck the Status Quo IPA.
So I said this was your red herring.
You thought this was the fake one? Because it describes me.
I said Bedford.
And you've gone with Bedford. No, nothing that interesting in Bedford, I'm afraid, or the Amptill or Bedfordshire area. And that one actually comes from Richmond, over in South London. So you get all your trendies around there. And then, yeah, your last one, last but not least, zombie vaccine powwow. Any ideas?
I think I need this in order to win. In order to draw.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Fizz, you're
I've
one
got
up.
Two.
I've gone Ealing.
Oh, I said Ealing as well. Interesting.
Oh no, I've lost then.
Oh well, you Fiddler's not got it right. If that's any consolation.
No, it's not.
that one's from the Barnet area, so that's where Saracens are, from the Urban Alchemy Brewing Company. I also did enjoy some of their other names. Fat Labrador was a favourite of mine, which I thought was quite nice and had a good little picture on it. But yeah, I kept zombie vaccine because I thought it was topical. So, yep, there we go. Some of the best powwows from the championship areas.
So we've followed the theme of the final round of the 2021 championship, and it's gone quite tight at the end, hasn't it, Charles? 6-5.
Yeah.
Narrow win.
6-5.
Yeah, very much
narrow
so.
Narrow win. I look forward to taking you on next year.
Yeah, bring it on.
Imagine if someone were to whip out anything top secret all of a sudden at next week's award show, which we'll talk about later.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the regular season. Sid, Fids, it's been our first season of podcasting. How have you guys found it?
A lot of hard work.
Oh, all the researching of the games. All the researching last
you
play.
You won't believe the research for the games. So hard.
I've enjoyed it. It's given us an excuse to get together during lockdown.
Yeah.
Albeit virtually.
Yeah, it's been good.
But it's been good fun. And the rugby has also been equally brilliant. And I hope that people at home have enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed getting to know this league more. It's not something, I've never come from a championship town, so it's something I've really enjoyed getting to know and getting to understand a bit more about English rugby and some of the lower levels. So yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been good fun.
And it's not over yet. We've still got at the playoffs.
Indeed, we will be back next week for our end of season awards night.
Ooh.
So before the playoffs, we're going to do an end of season awards night bonus episode for everybody, all the loyal listeners, and
all 12 of you.
Yeah, all 12 of you.
Hi, Mum.
So we'll have our end of season awards night. So please do join us for that. It should be good fun.
What awards have we got? Tantalise some.
Yeah. Well, this was going to be this week's job, was to work out the awards, and I've come up with. I'm looking at the baldest team of the season.
Baldest team.
Fair enough. Most that is niche. Bald.
Yeah, boldest team niche of the season. We'll all pick our own individual teams of the season, combined teams of the season, I think. And there'll be plenty more to listen to. So please do join us for that.
Rumour has it as well that award ceremonies are a lovely time for a drink.
Oh, yes. We might indeed partake.
Fiddly, your drinking hand motions don't come across so well over a podcast medium.
No. So please join us for that, and we will also do an episode after both legs of the playoff final to round up all the action from that. So we're not quite done yet, but we have wrapped up the end of the regular season. Please do find us on social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram at changingroom_4. Please help us raise the profile of the championship by joining and sharing the conversation online. We think that's a really important thing to do in light of the lack of support from the RFU at the moment. But until next time, take care of yourselves and let's keep talking Champ Rugby.